Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode number 30. We're kind of freaking out over here that we're already at number 30. They kind of add up pretty quickly.
They absolutely are. So welcome for those of you that are new listeners. I'm Allie Miller and here with Carly. And if you're just tuning in now, today's episode is going to be a really fantastic topic that will, well, you know if you're reading it on your iTunes, but we'll introduce in a moment. But I want to give you guys some of our favorite episodes we've done for you to make sure that you check out and download. We have, in these last 30 episodes, gone through my entire pregnancy story and my delivery. We've talked to you about my foundational background and what functional medicine is. We've talked about three super nutrients that you may not be aware of, the role of Candida albicans and yeast, and even things like boosting your thyroid with food as medicine. Carly, what are some of the favorite topics that you've featured and you tell clients about all the time?
I was thinking about it, and I have to go with keto, just because I'm passionate about it. I could talk about it all day long, and it also is helpful when I have 45 minutes in a session and someone leaves a little bit overwhelmed and confused and we don't have any more time. I'm just like, check out the episodes. I think it can sink in better when you can pause it, rewind it, reiterate. I had a statistics teacher tell me the rule of six. You have to hear something six times until you understand it, so it's good for the repetition.
Absolutely. And we reference keto, but there's one specific to ketosis. And then I would say my favorites are probably the ones on leaky gut and IBS, as well as the candida one, because I think all three of them touch on different elements of dysfunction within the body. And so many people's chronic illness starts within the gut, as we've all discussed leading up to this. So today's topic, we are talking about the MRT test. So I think in about like 40%, maybe 60% of our episodes.
And 60.
Yeah. We've talked about this Elucid MRT test. And so this is a blood panel that looks at inflammatory response to 150 foods and chemicals. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of the mechanisms of the test, who would be a good candidate for it, the protocol of implementing the data, because of course I always tell clients the application is only as functional as if you're doing the process. The information of the lab isn't going to heal your body. So we'll talk about who would be a good candidate for it, how the system works, and the results and success stories that we've seen.
And we can talk very personally about it. It's such a fantastic test. I have done it three times. I've had a little bit of a gut restoration story myself. So I can speak to it very personally. I would say it is one of the best tests, but it's one of the most difficult. So we'll get into the nitty gritty. But before we launch into this episode, we do have a new sponsor and a new product that we're really, really excited about that we want to share with you all.
I'm really excited to tell you about some of the superfood ingredients available from Perfect Supplements. Gelatin is one of the highlights of their product line, and it's something that I use on a regular basis and love the fact that Perfect Bovine Gelatin is sourced from 100% pasture-raised, grass-fed, non-GMO cattle with no hormones, synthetics, or pesticides.
I agree. When I'm burnt out from bone broth, I really love making gelatin treats. The Perfect Bovine Gelatin is a really great way to go. My other favorite is when I travel, I take a couple of packets of the Perfect Hydrolyzed Collagen. I love the fact that they offer the single serving packets of 100% grass-fed collagen. It's made of 90% protein, tasteless, and completely dissolves in any liquid. I love adding it to my iced coffee in the morning when I travel. It's just easy. Maybe a splash of almond milk at the coffee bar in the airport, and it keeps me satisfied until I land and can get a balanced meal.
As a way to introduce Perfect Supplements to all of you guys in my audience, We have an exclusive coupon to share with you all for 10% off of any order. Visit perfectsupplements.com and enter the coupon code ALLI10, that's A-L-I in caps, 10 at checkout, and you'll save 10% on their whole product line, which includes superfoods, the collagen, aquatic greens, and more. Also, you can visit our podcast page and find the Perfect Supplements link under this episode, which will lead you to their whole line of superfoods.
The gelatin and collagen especially are great for gut restoration, which we've talked about in a couple of our episodes. So make sure to check it out and use code ALLI10. Okay, so let's dive in and first talk about what the MRT is and what it tests.
So as I mentioned, it's a blood panel and it looks at an inflammatory mechanism in the body. So a lot of food sensitivity, and this is a food sensitivity versus a food allergy panel. And I guess maybe we should first distinguish between the two. A food allergy is typically going to be diagnosed as something that is anaphylactic or immediate onset. And this is assessed with an IgE reaction. So when you hear Ig, it stands for immunoglobulin. IgE is a type of tagging of the immune system, which is measured in the blood, and that assesses for immediate hypersensitivity. So this can be more of like an anaphylactic reaction, like tightness in the throat, shortness of breath, if you see puffy lips. These are foods typically of things like shellfish or peanut or soy. A lot of those are an IgE reactivity. Now, when we're looking at food sensitivity, this can be things that can be a delayed reaction upwards of 72 hours in the body. And this can also be seen in things like dermatitis. This can be seen with symptoms of IBS, so bloating, GI cramping, loose stools, diarrhea. We'll go into all the symptoms in a moment, but this is a delayed sensitivity. So it can make really tricky for our clients to know what's irritating my body because they can have a reaction anytime between 20 minutes after consuming the food, upwards of 3 days after consuming the food. So the MRT test looks at type 3 and type 4 IgG responders, which is a type of a delayed immunoglobulin. And you may have heard of like the ELISA test. This is a very popular test as well. And the ELISA looks at only the type 3, which is only 25% of the inflammatory food response or food sensitivity marking. Also, if we just look at IgG, we can get a lot of false positives. For instance, if you eat almonds every day, chances are you may have an elevation of IgG. And I explain that to patients in that's really your immune system simply tagging. So an IgG increase can sometimes be neutral just by increased exposure. So the MRT test takes it a step further. It not only looks at both type 3 and type 4 of IgG, which is more than that 25%, it also looks at the inflammatory chemicals. So it looks at things like interleukins, cytokines, prostaglandins, and these are all of our inflammatory mediators or chemicals that literally light off lighter fluid in the body, driving inflammation. So a lot of our family of drug medications are targeting these inflammatory chemicals, things like steroids, things like autoimmune related drugs. Many of these work to reduce the expression of the inflammation. But with functional medicine, using the MRT test, we can look at what foods and chemicals, when consumed, drive and cause that inflammation versus really just silencing the symptom.
And what's really important to know and point out is that these reactions are 100% different for everyone. So this test will never come back the same. It's very, very personal medicine. So we'll never start trying to heal someone jumping into this test. We always start with clean eating, but if someone's eating so well, all organic, and they are having, and we'll get into what other symptoms they might be experiencing, but if they're having issues, this is a test that takes it a step further, and it really is a game changer for so many people.
For sure. And I know that you guys have seen or heard Carly and I definitely talk about that mantra of someone's superfood is someone else's kryptonite. And that's exactly what we see with this MRT test. So like Carly was saying, we're going to start everyone with an anti-inflammatory diet. And that's going to be pushing foods like turmeric or pushing foods like salmon for omega-3 fatty acids or leafy greens or quercetin in our onion and allium family. However, this test specifically works as like a GPS for the body, telling us what's driving inflammation down to the level of the individual's immune system. And if you've heard our episodes on immune system and immune health, we think of the immune system as an individualized surveillance system. So the immune system is looking at overreacting or underreacting, either shutting down in the form of things like cancer or more susceptibility to cold or viruses, or the immune system is going to go haywire and drive out inflammation based on response to antigens. And antigens are these compounds from foods or chemicals. So, like I said, the best way to think of this panel is like a GPS. It tells you to your blood which foods are the least and the most inflammatory.
Yeah, so let's be sure. You talked about IgE. You mentioned the ELISA test. Let's clarify for everyone how this test really is different from all those tests, because they can be very pricey, and I know people think that they're the end-all, but I really want to differentiate what separates this test from the rest.
Sure, yeah, I think that's good. So as I mentioned, the IgE test is something that's done for an immediate hypersensitivity. So that would be to assess someone that has like an EpiPen that has had a flare that has been anaphylactic or immediate reactive and quite severe. And that is a food allergy. Any other of the panels are looking at food sensitivity, and that's the IgG. As I mentioned, the ELISA looks at the IgG type 3. There's also type 4 within the IgG family of classification. And then there's also skin tests that are done by a lot of allergists. The way that skin tests work is they take that antigen or that protein compound and they actually introduce it into the dermatological layer of tissue, so into your skin, and then they watch for your skin to have a flare or a reaction. So it's looking at reactive response, but the MRT test looks for reactive response as well, as it measures beyond the IgG type 3 and 4, it measures the inflammatory chemicals. And the reason why I'm a bigger fan of looking at the inflammatory chemicals in the blood versus in the skin is because our skin is not going to be going through the digestive processes of digestive enzymes. It doesn't process through acidic changes. And food antigens should not be passing through the dermal tissue. And so it may not be representative of our digestive reaction or our blood reaction. It may be more specific to the external barrier or the skin.
Absolutely.
And, one more thing. Sorry. I just have one more thing with the skin. There's a researcher that I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but she's from Europe, and she's very against the RAST or skin testing because she believes that that can actually drive food sensitivity because the immune system goes on alert because this undigested food particle enters the bloodstream through the dermatological tissue. And so if your skin, an antigen passes through the skin into the blood, you're introducing something. Whereas again, with the MRT test, we remove your blood and introduce the antigen in an external environment to watch for the chemical reaction of inflammation. And so we're not putting the individual at risk by inducing an antigen to their system.
That's interesting.
If that makes sense. You know, so there's kind of both edges of the data of also not doing harm with your testing.
So basically, you know, with repairing leaky gut, we're trying to remove, seal your digestive tract so that you're not getting all of this reactivity into your blood. But you're saying the dermal test is forcing an antigen into your blood.
And the antigen isn't denatured by your stomach acid or enzymes. Right. And so it's this really foreign antibody. Whereas I will acknowledge it's a moderately foreign antibody in an external blood test as well.
Sure.
You can't really mimic the digestive process through a lab. But again, it's the best way to know on both inflammatory and tagging what our system is having inflammation from.
That's interesting. So I think everyone listening can probably know that this test so far is very good for anyone looking to identify a food intolerance. But let's talk about who else we would run this test for. Who else would be a good candidate?
Yes. So really any digestive disturbance, like Carly said, so we could first go through those. So starting from the top down, you know, even issues like eosinophilic esophagitis or EOE, where people's throat close not in an anaphylactic reaction, but on a chronic white blood cell reaction, because remember your immune system is comprised predominantly those white blood cells are your mediators, which drive the inflammation and the immune response. So eosinophilic esophagitis or throat closing on a chronic level or having difficulty difficulty swallowing could be a candidate. Reflux or heartburn could be resolved through the MRT test. IBS or IBD, so GI cramping, bloating or distension, constipation or diarrhea, any end of the spectrum there. And then inflammation outside of the GI. So looking at the cardinal symptoms of inflammation, muscle aches, chronic fatigue syndrome, body aches, even looking at things like arthritis. We can also look at autoimmune related conditions, so things like multiple sclerosis. We can look at headaches and migraines as another big field of candidates that are a good fit.
And also weight, stubborn weight loss. We don't typically run this panel. We'll start with low glycemic, we'll start with clean eating, maybe even ketosis,
but tracking macronutrients.
It is something to consider if your body is not losing weight because it's reacting to foods and you might not have the symptoms that are so obvious that other people have.
It's true. I've had patients that deny fluid retention as far as they don't feel they retain fluid in their appendages, like they don't get puffy ankles or they don't have swelling and their rings don't fit tight, yet their weight can fluctuate on the scale 3 to 7 pounds in a day. And I often say that's a fluid inflammation response. You know, if you bump your elbow on the table and you're creating injury to that area of tissue, you're going to get puffiness. And that puffiness is fluid getting into that tissue trying to repair that injury with your immune responders. And so if your whole system is chronically inflamed from inflammatory foods and food and chemical sensitivity, then you have this barrier of defense that puts you in this anabolic mode and doesn't allow you to go through the catabolism that's needed to require weight loss or to burn fat in the body.
Yep. So before everyone gets too excited, because I'm sure there's people out there like, oh, I want it. Give me that test.
Yes.
It's so important. We always tell our clients before we run this that this is an amazing test, but it is very difficult. Compliance is very hard. And it's because you have to have full control over your food. And anytime you go out to dinner, do you ever really fully know every single ingredient that's in there? You know, the cooking oils, the pepper, the paprika that's sprinkled on last minute. So it can really disrupt your social life. And so I just
absolutely
want Allie for a moment to talk about compliance and its importance.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The first time I ran the panel myself, olive oil was a yellow. And so I guess we should first determine what those are. So the way that the test works is it looks at 150 foods and chemicals, and it gives you kind of a bar graph per se in different categories. So there's a chemical section, there's a dairy section. The dairy section is going to look at things like whey, goat's milk, cow's milk, cheddar cheese, cottage cheese, yogurt. So they're looking at different elements of how the dairy composition is changed based on fermentation or based on aging chemicals or based on concentration of proteins and such. It looks at a section called flavor enhancers. So like Carly said, even to the level of paprika. So flavor enhancers will have your herbs, seasonings, and spices. Then it looks at fruits, vegetables, grains, and the grain section breaks down beyond the gluten containing grains. It's going to look at things like spelt and rye and barley wheat, of course, and then things like corn and oats and quinoa. And that's one of the most interesting categories. We do commonly see wheat and corn, I would say,
yes,
as the highest reaction trend, which, you know, those are in our anti-inflammatory diet. First things we're going to remove. But some people have a strong reaction to quinoa, and they've been eating this in their gluten-free approach. And so that's a nice distinguishable section there. It has a seafood section, a protein section, and then it has a miscellaneous category with like tea and coffee and tapioca and other types of foods. And then the last section is the beans and nuts and seeds. And so within these sections, as Carly was mentioning, the first thing to understand is not every chemical in the book can be tested. So there are chemicals that are assessed, like tyramine, which is an aging chemical, or sulfites, which are preservatives, or food dyes, like red number 40 and yellow number 6. But things like guar gum aren't tested. And when you're talking about navigating this protocol, the best way to use the data is to only eat the foods that have strategically been tested. And so I've also seen people misuse a food sensitivity panel where they just avoid the reactive foods, but then they eat all these outside the tested range foods, and we don't know if they would have had an inflammatory response to those foods. So you have to really navigate, and as Carly mentioned, the word immunocalm, what that is the jump off point of this protocol. So we give our patient their results, we explain to them where those reactive foods are found and how to start to swap those foods off. And then we have them look at their social calendar, like Carly said, and figure out when they could be really strict for a 2-week period of time. And we use those first 2 weeks and we call that immunocalm. And as that sounds, it's really calming the inflammation in the immune system. So of the green scored foods or the non-reactive foods, there's going to be different levels of how even non-inflammatory they are, or you know, the shorter length of the bar, the less inflammatory, and then it kind of is going to extend before it becomes deemed as a yellow moderate reaction, or further down the line, a red or a severe reaction. So we have them remove the yellow foods for a 3-month period of time and the red foods for a 6-month period of time. And throughout this process, during those first 3 months, we want to jump into it with wringing out the inflammation as quickly as possible. And that's called immunocalm. And so during that process, we eat the foods that are the least reactive of the non-reactive bank of foods. And so even of your quote-unquote green foods, you're only consuming about 50% of those foods. And we work with the patient to have like 3 breakfasts, 3 lunches, and 3 dinner options and some snacks within there. And this diet approach is not like an 80-20 approach. You know, we talk to patients about how maybe with your calories, you want to have a cheat day. I hate the term of a cheat day, by the way, but this is something that you have to commit to because we're talking about your immune system recognizing an antigen. And so if you have that paprika dusted on your plate and paprika was a yellow, or if you have leeks in the base of your soup and leeks were a red, that's going to light off that lighter fluid and the immune system says, oh, I remember, I do not like leeks. Boom, here's your chemical inflammatory response. And in theory, you really have to start with that individual food from square one. So you don't have to start the whole diet from scratch, but it becomes super complicated if you have to stagger your data per food. So we really encourage our patients streamline and jump off with this immunocalm, which is the least reactive foods. Then they transition to all greens or all tested foods for the next 3 to 6 weeks. And then we start to liberalize from there.
So if you can't tell, you need to be super motivated to take this, which most of our clients are. They've gone to the GI doctor, they've gone to everyone else, they've tried a PPI for reflux, and they're still miserable. So at this point, they'll do anything. And so that's, in sort of a way, it's a beautiful thing because they get great results when they follow the protocol.
Yeah, I think the GI clients, because their changes shift overnight, get the biggest bang for their buck as far as the results immediate. And that's because, like Carly said, they are compliant. They'll know if there's tomato in the dish once they know how good they feel from removing tomato, if that was a response. So I guess back to my olive oil thing. So olive oil was one of my yellows. So it was a moderate reaction. And I was just shocked. The first 2 weeks of my immunocalm, I did not dine out because I knew that there was no way I could only eat these limited ingredients. Actually, breakfast, I started to eat at week 2. And I would order it like this. I would say I would like 2 eggs poached in water because I couldn't have butter yet. 2 eggs poached in water. And 1/2 of an avocado and 2 slices of tomato. And I do not want anything fancy done to them. I want seriously those 3 ingredients on a plate. And they would look at me and I would just say, I have a lot of food. I would call it food allergies because honestly, the restaurant takes that a lot more serious.
Yep.
And I would just say, I would just like those 3 ingredients, don't do anything fancy. And I learned to say don't do anything fancy because black pepper was one of my yellows. And often the chef would want to crack black pepper on that or throw some herbs on that, you know. So I would have to really ask them for what I wanted versus navigate the menu. And so the olive oil thing was wild because I would often say, oh, I can't do olive oil. And the server would always be like, oh, well, we don't use olive oil. Like we use canola oil or we use vegetable oil. Or
even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, well, vegetable oil hasn't been tested, but I don't want that either. So I'll have butter. And butter really became my friend after that first 2 weeks when I could bring in the cow's milk.
You know what's funny is restaurants have started to ask, so is it an allergy or an intolerance? And I tell all my clients, tell them it's an allergy because you know what? First of all, I know it's a liability with them if it's an allergy, but it really, if you ask to not have it, it shouldn't matter.
They should take it just as serious. Yes. You're right.
So mm-hmm. I say, tell them it's an allergy. Tell them that you will swell up and fall over so they don't mess with it.
Yep. So, you know, this whole protocol, I don't want to freak you guys out and tell you not to do. I think it's fabulous. We've seen lives change literally with the influence that we can see from this panel. And this can drive long-term recovery. What's really beautiful process is, like I said, we remove those yellows for 90 days and the reds for 180 days. And so, you know, we're really allowing the immune system to reset in this process. And so after the 90-day period, we allow the client 1 week at a time to strategically test and reintroduce those foods to assess if they have inflammation from those foods. And the theory behind that is that the immune cells regenerate 90-day cycles. And so really, immunologically speaking, you should be a new surveillance system at the end of that time. So if you didn't have slip-ups of cross-contamination or introduction of those antigens of the foods you're supposed to eliminate, your immune system is recalibrated and kind of reassessing whether it's friend or foe to the reaction. And Carly, how often do you see, like, when you're doing a retest or a strategic introduction, that people do react, or what's kind of the percent that you would guesstimate when they start to test those foods again of reactivity?
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, how about personally?
Personally, I'm trying to think because I've done it 3 times. I would say 20% maybe.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, it's low, but it's there. There are some foods that I think are just always going to be there for people.
Right.
And that's what is helpful to identify when you do run the test a couple times. Like, oh, you know, celery came up again. Your body just might not like it. If you did a really good job avoiding it, it's still not something your body likes.
Yeah.
So it's low, but it's there.
Yep. And so I always say, you know, the beauty of this is not something that has to be a long-term change. And the more compliant you are with, as Carly mentioned, restoring or sealing your gut, which we'll get into that in a moment, the better your outcomes are going to be in your reintroduction process. So it's like this pathway of with restriction comes freedom. So the more compliant you are in the jump off and the process through this, the less sensitivity you'll have going forward. And so you'll have more food freedom, less reactivity in general when you're dining out.
I was just thinking, we did an episode on leaky gut, which really ties into this too.
Yes.
We'll refer a lot to MRT test in episode number 24. So definitely listen to that because that plays a part in helping everyone understand how do you develop these reactions and what this whole barrier system is about in the GI tract.
Yes. So let's go into maybe the protocol how we use this.
So basically, functional medicine uses a 3R approach, which Allie has spoken to, especially in probably the leaky gut. And I know we have another digestive podcast.
IBS. Yes. I think we speak to a little bit.
IBS. Mm-hmm. So the MRT test is a great pillar in the first R. So Allie, do you want to kind of walk them briefly through the RRR approach?
Sure. I like the tone that you say briefly.
I don't know. Short, that's lady. Not happening.
So I will keep it brief because we have gone over this. Like I said, those two, like Carly said, those are two good episodes to also listen to. But the first R is remove. So you want to remove the gastric irritant. And the irritant can be food or chemical or biological. So food or chemical is where we would run this MRT test to determine the reaction. And that's where we'd be removing strategically through the diet. The other thing, the biological pathway would be if there was things like yeast overgrowth or if there was dysbiosis, imbalance in your gut bacteria or a parasite. Those are all things that we'd have to remove with an antifungal or antibacterial reset of the microbiome and the intestinal tract. And so if we're on this side of the fence, we're looking at this MRT test as the remove. And again, it's looking at that 150 foods and chemicals in the 3 and 6 month removal process based on the inflammatory response. So it's important that we look at the foods that we can't have for that length of time, but we also focus on then the foods that we, as I said, can have as the safe green foods and start with the strictest least reactive to get the process moving forward. Then, if you're not sure where you fall within the remove, you're like, well, I know I have bloating, I know I have diarrhea, I know I have constipation. Some of the ways that we determine this as practitioners is your bloating constant, meaning like every single day? And does the bloating always trend to create more distension throughout the cascade of the day, or is it intermittent? Like, do you sometimes get a food baby after brunch, but then it might resolve by dinner? Or sometimes you get bloated, but other times you don't. Then if it's more intermittent, I would likely jump into food sensitivity and or chemical sensitivity.
Or hormones, I'd say, if it's
cyclical. But that should be more cyclical as far as maybe a three-day or a five-day lead-in.
Or monthly as opposed
to. For sure. And that's something to watch for too. But if it's constant and it's extending and going to get more distended throughout the day, that's typically bacterial because the bacteria is eating and fermenting what you're consuming. So that's one way to assess. And then the other is really if you have an inkling or an intuition of a food sensitivity. I think, and that sounds silly, but it's true. You know,
people say, usually know, you're right.
Yeah, they're like, I know it was from eating something. I can't put my finger on it, but I know it was from eating something. Or I know when I removed gluten, I started feeling 60% or 70% better, but there's still something there. I had a client recently who said, every time I have spicy food, but then there's other foods and I can't put my finger on it. And the funny thing was cumin and garlic showed up as significant reds. And although he was thinking of like capsaicin, the chemical in peppers, or something spicy like a jalapeno, it was the fact that all of the spicy dishes he had always had either garlic or cumin in it. And so it's nice to be able to have that direct GPS information to help you navigate.
It is, because it's interesting. Some clients come in so diligent and they've been tracking everything. But when you are reacting to, first of all, when it's a delayed sensitivity, so it's 3 days later, how the heck do you know?
Right.
And secondly, when it's tyramine, so it's something that's maybe more so present in eggplant than it is tomato, but it's present in both. So you really only feel it when you have both in the same day. I mean, it's just, it's too much.
Right.
So
solanine and the nightshades, right?
Nightshade, sorry.
Yeah.
Tyramine's different. But yeah, it's. Even I'm saying basically even the best client who's diligent about their health has a really hard time honing in on it. So it's helpful. We do too.
And that's why I will tell my patients point blank. Let's start with an anti-inflammatory diet. If you're not getting results, we can do an elimination diet. But our elimination diet is kind of crossed in with our anti-inflammatory diet. We remove the primary inflammatory chemicals. And I always say, if you just want the data because you're going to get burnt out in the process, let's start there.
Right.
Something to consider. So removing the irritant. Then the next thing we look at, oh, and one last thing to notice on that is that within the MRT test, one of the chemicals that's assessed is Candida albicans. So this is a yeast overgrowth in the body. So also if you feel like you're not certain where you fall, I'll sometimes lean on the MRT test because that'll at least tell us both the fungal element as well as the food and chemical. So it does get into a little bit of the biological there.
Speaking of, do you know how they test for the Candida? What antigen do they use?
So there are actually, you can do a Candida panel, which looks at IgG, IgA, and IgE responders for Candida albicans species.
Okay.
So it's actually assessed with the Candida albicans species, but it's in a whole compound. So they actually take the yeast and then they actually induce that to your blood.
Interesting.
So what they're really looking for, what's interesting is I have had false positives if someone has successfully eradicated Candida because their blood gets really pissed off when Candida enters it.
Interesting.
And so sometimes following like a stool test, if you've done a yeast cleanse, you might get Candida as a response. And it's not always 100% indicative of Candida.
Because it's your response to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then I will always have my patient, you know, go through the symptoms of if they're dealing with the distension, the fatigue, the brain fog. And it is a first you know harm approach to treat it. So I typically just go ahead and treat it.
Sure.
Yeah. But if they had just finished a Candida cleanse, I will allow them some time to really assess if it's an issue anymore.
Okay.
So the next R, which is really important too, is to restore optimal digestion. So we want to give all of our clients a good quality probiotic. A good one to start with is the Naturally Nourished Baseline Probiotic. As it sounds, it's a baseline formula having 15 billion colony-forming units. Really good to line the GI tract there. And, you know, our probacteria help in metabolic processing. So they actually help with the digestive process. They actually break down that antigen to be more user-friendly for the bloodstream so that the immune system doesn't freak out as much from undigested antigen. So that's one of the big elements as far as the benefit of the probiotics beyond helping the immune system be less inflammatory in general, and then also helping our digestive tract with motility and digestive regulation and such. Enzymes are another thing that are super important here. And so we look at enzymes, which help with the digestive process, digestive enzymes specifically. So things like lipase and proteases, amylase, these compounds along with DPP-4. DPP-4 is a particular compound that helps with gluten breakdown. I put all of my clients on Digestaid, which is an enzyme, also a naturally nourished private label one. It's just an awesome product because it has ox bile. Bile helps your body to break down and keep the regulation of the acidity in the gastric area. And the bile also helps, like soap removes dirt, to create bowel formation. So for people that are lacking a gallbladder or having insufficiency in their gallbladder, that extra bile can really help that liver gallbladder process. And then the DPP-4 helps for cross-contamination of gluten. So all of my clients, especially if wheat is a red, I have them take enzymes at every meal that they're dining out with, even if they're not having bloating or distension or cramping, because that helps to give a little bit of insurance of if they did have that cross-contamination.
For sure.
And then, go ahead.
The third one, I was just going to say repairing of the gut lining if you were done with the restore part.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big ones. We look at restore and functional medicine of looking at like micronutrients as well. But I'm not going to get into that whole spiel. Carly said I have to keep it short. So then the third R, so removing the irritant, restoring optimal function, and then repairing the GI lining. So this is where Carly referenced that sealant on the tank per se. So these are anti-inflammatory compounds. Glutamine, L-glutamine, is the amino acid that is a fuel source and a building block for your enterocytes. So it's interesting, when we test micronutrients or even glutamate as a neurotransmitter, often it's deficient in individuals that have GI issues or leaky gut because it's being metabolized on higher demand. And so L-glutamine we give at week 6 to start to help the gut to rebuild or restore itself. And then we provide in our GI lining support L-glutamine in conjunction with aloe vera, which is very anti-inflammatory and mucilaginous or oopy-goopy, so that kind of cooling, slow delivery along the GI tract. And then DGL, which is diglycerized licorice. DGL works to repair ulcerations. So this is a really great triad formula that we talk about also in the leaky gut episode. But we lay this down in your protocol after you have diligently in the first 2 weeks done the immunocalm, then you've liberalized to your tested greens. Then we want you to seal that tank before we bring in any outliers.
And this would be a good time, if it's MRT appropriate, to have things like bone broth. So hopefully if you can have beef or chicken or even turkey or collagen or gelatin powder, which can be derived from seafood or from beef, those things will act like the glutamine to help repair and restore the gut as well.
Yeah, and their composition, you know, bone broth should gelatinize, you know, and so getting that gelatin or using grass-fed gelatin, like from Perfect Supplements, grass-fed gelatin is a great source that can help to cool and soothe that gut lining as well as a food as medicine intervention in addition to the GI lining supplement.
Okay, so that was a little snapshot of the RRR, that's the functional medicine approach to restoring the gut, and kind of our interpretation at Naturally Nourished and how we use the protocol with clients. So there's a couple terms that come up when going over the MRT test, and I just want to clarify those, especially for our clients, so we can refer to them this podcast to clarify in their quiet space after they've been overwhelmed in the office.
Yes.
They can go back and reiterate. But the first one is an outlier. So Allie, what in the spectrum of an MRT test is considered an outlier?
So I think it's great, you know, timing. So after you've started to lay down, as I mentioned, that restoration at week 6, Then we're going to bring in, after a week of restoring the gut lining, testing these outliers, which are things that haven't been tested. So as I mentioned, only 150 foods and chemicals get tested. And that sounds like a lot of things, but things that you consume every single day, like maybe chia seed, which unfortunately isn't tested in the nuts and seeds section, or kale or Brussels sprout. These are not included in the vegetable section. There's a lot of vegetables included, like zucchini, yellow squash, tomatoes, mushrooms. But kale and Brussels sprouts are not tested. Things like pomegranate are not tested in the fruit section. And then there can even be other chemical additives. And so the way that we look at this is, if it is an antigen that is, or a compound, excuse me, that was derived from that antigen. So I've had patients ask about, for instance, olive oil. So olive is tested in the fruit section because botanically it's a fruit. So although olive oil isn't listed, olive oil would fall into the scoring included within the word olive. I get that a lot. I don't know if you do. But like, so same thing when you see avocado. Avocado is inclusive of avocado oil, or grape. You know, if you're looking at where wine falls, wine is technically tested because the ingredient is going to be a grape, and then you're going to look at your sulfite chemical because sulfites are added to wine as the preservative. And then you might also want to see if you have a reaction to tyramine, which is an aging chemical. So there's some foods that, although the exact ingredient isn't listed, using the data we can determine reactivity. But an outlier is something that's completely not related to anything that's been tested and doesn't have that direct connection. Is that a good way of describing it?
Yeah, it's perfect. And I like to tell my clients, you're doing so much work to lower inflammation. Why risk it? Because, you know, if you eat Brussels sprouts, it's 50-50 chance that you're reacting to it.
And you might have a severe reaction to it. So it's hindering your outcomes. You're muckying the water of your data. And so, yeah, often clients ask about, well, what's a good chip I can have? What about Bonito corn chips? Because I can have corn and I can have bean. And it's like, yeah, but safflower oil is technically an outlier. But there are products that are really, and this is what's beautiful about the protocol too, is I think it really cleans up your diet.
Sure.
And it makes you super aware of additive ingredients. Like, you know, now I know of brands to recommend, like Jackson's Honest is a line of chips that has three ingredients. It's either cooked in coconut oil or I believe they use avocado oil, or maybe it's
avocado.
Olive oil. I don't know.
It's avocado.
But it's one of the oils that's tested, I know. And so also like Boom Chicka Pop uses sunflower oil and then the popcorn and the salt and is non-GMO. And so if a patient is okay with corn and they're okay with sunflower seed, that's technically a snack that they can have. And so it's really getting to as black and white as it is of the ingredients being tested or not. And if they're not tested, even if the foundational ingredients are, but there's additives that are not, that would be technically an outlier. So starting at week 7, we have the patients give us a list of outliers that they commonly consume. So if they, for instance, have cilantro growing in their garden, cilantro is technically an outlier. We would have them introduce that food 3 days in a row. And what we're looking for is signs of inflammation that trend and accumulate over that 3-day process. And so if, for instance, like Carly said, weight loss could be a sign, or stubborn weight loss, weight gain would be a sign of inflammation. This is the only time I would have a patient weigh themselves every day, is when they're testing these foods for a 4-day period. So they're giving themselves a wash period post the testing. So Monday, if we're talking cilantro, they might do 2 tablespoons of cilantro. Tuesday, they might do 4 tablespoons of cilantro. And Wednesday, they might do 6 tablespoons of cilantro in a couple different dishes. And what they're looking for is, if it's a migraine headache, more severity to come on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. If they had a migraine on Tuesday, but on Wednesday, they were brave enough to eat more of the food and they didn't have a reaction on Wednesday or Thursday, then that would be another thing that they consumed and likely not the cilantro. So that's the best way that we can test outliers. We don't test them in a lab setting. We test them based on our reactivity. And we hope that by the 6-week process, their inflammation has come down, that they should have symptom reactivity.
Yeah, you wind up being a big food detective at Whole Foods, looking at every single ingredient of every label, but that's just a good skill for life.
Absolutely. And like I said, it helps with the clean eating. So I think that's really important.
Yes. So I know you touched on this a bit, but what about non-reactive people.
So, yeah, you know, like when we're talking about people that have digestive disturbances, like we said, they know right away when it's inflammatory process. But I've had people that run this panel that know that maybe their C-reactive protein is up or they have inflammation in their body, but they don't know. They don't get that food feedback. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they're not going to get like a wrist ache or a joint ache as they test these foods. Or they're not going to maybe see a transition in that bloating in their belly or, you know, they're not having a tangible response. There's just that low-grade systemic inflammation. And so for those individuals, I often try to get them to avoid the outliers or really max test the ones that are highly consumed or just to limit the outliers as much as possible because unfortunately they're not going to get that feedback or data. Does that,
right.
Do you do that with your clients?
Like, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
If they're not getting that feedback, I don't want them to burn out and be like, chia seed, one tablespoon, two, three.
I mean, I think all of us as practitioners take this test differently with everyone. I always say, I'm going to tell you the best way to do it.
Yeah,
but we have to talk about what you'll do because some people will get too mad and they'll say, I'm not doing this because they are way too busy or it's just not realistic. So I always say, this is what I wish we could do, but I think we have to do this for now. So you make adjustments, and that's a perfect example. And those people are not going to be as motivated because they just don't understand why they're doing it. They don't have that other than that CRP marker.
Right, or cancer. I think cancer is a whole nother family.
Yes.
With cancer clients, we often use the MRT test because with cancer, your immune system is on low response. And so the immune system could also be overwhelmed or distracted by these antigens. So there's a lot of immunological testing that we're seeing in the advances of cancer research. And so we want to know if your immune system is really angry or having 10, 12 red inflammatory responses to food chemicals, then it's not putting its energy into attacking tumorigenic activity and it's not being a good cancer fighter. And so by eliminating these inflammatory foods, the immune system is better able to do its work to fight the cancer in the body. But same thing with cancer patients, we can't really test those outliers. They're not going to see a direct reaction unless they also have GI distress.
Right.
So for those patients, we just really try to clean out their diet, really stick to the green and find abundance within that restriction. And it's really wild. I mean, I have recipes for a no-mato sauce using like bell pepper instead of tomatoes. There's so many things that when we're talking smoothies, there's 7 different bases you can use for smoothies versus your almond milk if you can't have that or what have you. And it helps you to get creative and also get a more diverse web of nutrients, I think, versus restrictive. It's a really beautiful process. But for some people, the concept of outliers just doesn't work is something.
Yep.
I wanted to address.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So let's just talk about real quickly why we have to remove foods for 3 or 6 months. I think this is something important for people to understand because the timeline seems random if you don't know.
Yeah. So the 3-month period is I kind of mentioned how your immune system is going to regenerate 90-day cycles. And so we're trying to be mindful that you're starting with a point scratch immune system. And so you're resetting your immune system by putting out the fire by only eating the less inflammatory foods, removing the lighter fluid, and then if that fire's out, the lighter fluid that was once detected should not evoke a flame. And so really allowing the immune system to reset is really important. And that's why for the severe reactions, we go 6 months or 180 days, because that's really just giving us that extra insurance policy.
Yep. And another question I get all the time is, what happens once you've gotten all the way through this test, you've tested all the reds, does that mean you can eat these things and you're fine for life? Do you have no more inflammation? What does that mean once they've gotten through the test?
So, you know, for a reactive individual, I would have them test those reds and see if they're having reactions. And then I do say that the data starts to get antiquated because remember, this is a time stamp. This is a flash in time of your immune system at that time of its blood state, how it reacted. And that's also something I say to my patients is, be mindful of when you get these results. Like, this is the scary time. Right now it's end of September. And so this is the scary time for me as a practitioner to recommend this panel.
Yes.
Because they're probably not going to get started till like the end of October. And I always look at my patient and say, frankly, you know, like, are you going to navigate holiday parties and dining out and social engagements and bring your own food? Because there's no way you can eat at a party because everything's going to have ingredients that you're not going to know and you're probably not going to harass the host of the party. And so it depends on how long they are in the process. But from the day that the test is run, really the data is valid for about 8 months or 9 months is a pretty good range, because again, your immune system has reset about three times within that time frame. So the data starts to antiquate at 3 months in, and then it further gets antiquated. And so the beautiful thing, like we said in the beginning, is you don't have to avoid these foods forever, but there will be like a 20% overlap of some of the foods that you had a reaction to are going to be either lifers or longer term or repeat for you on a retest. But we do recommend retesting at about that 9 month, at least within a year period. And you'll have about, some of the reds might become a yellow or less reactive from severe. And then some of your yellows will become a green or a non-reactive. And the other thing we see is that foods that were once a green become a yellow or a red. And do you want to explain the process of why that would happen? I often get that, like a patient's like, what the heck? I avoided salmon because it was a red, and I was eating tuna all the time, and now tuna's a red. Like, you know, why would that happen? Or tuna used to be my lowest green. What's up with that? This test is just giving me random things.
The difficult part about that is that in the beginning, if you do have leaky gut, and you know, we tell people you're supposed to rotate foods. Don't say yogurt or tuna is a low and eat it every single day.
Yeah.
Because we haven't done the work to seal the tank yet. So those things can become reactive if you eat them too much. So that can be frustrating. You can't control it. You just have to do the best you can do. And that's why we always preach rotation of your diet.
Yeah.
Don't just pick one thing and eat it every day.
Yes. And that's exactly why, like Carla was saying, if your gut's repairing, your immune system in the mode of mellowing out is like, oh, well, now we hate that thing that we're always doing.
Right, right.
And so that is common. And it's something that, again, rotation is key. So not eating the same proteins. But the best we can work with rotation and abundance, the more nourished you'll be through the process. And I really feel that this is a gold standard for reducing the inflammation and seeing optimal outcomes with a whole myriad of disease states.
And the other thing to mention too is that if you're having reactions to a food that's low green, you have to listen to your body. This is very, very helpful, accurate test, but it's not exhaustive. There are some other mediators that are not measured in this test. So you have to listen to your own body. I've seen tests where people are sick, not maybe necessarily celiac, but get very sick with wheat, and wheat is not reactive to them.
Right.
So it's a different mechanism. It's very accurate, but you also have to listen to your intuition and know what doesn't work
for
you.
How many people have followed a GPS into a ditch?
There you go.
Just saying. So I want to leave you guys, I'm sure you're all delightfully overwhelmed. I want to leave you with some resources. A couple things that we have on the Ali Miller RD website. Check out in our books and programs tabs under webinars, we have the 3 R's of gut restoration. This is a really great summary that has visuals. It's an hour recording of me doing this to a live audience with a Q&A at the end. And it talks through this 3-R approach. It is going to talk deeper about the test and the mechanisms of digestive disturbances and whole body health, starting with healing the gut. Another thing that I would recommend checking out is if you're looking at more interest in this MRT test, you can do it through two ways. Go to our treatments tab under labs, and there's going to be, if you hover over labs, an element called MRT inflammatory food panel. Read up about it further, and you can purchase it in two different ways. You can purchase package A, which includes a 15-minute lab review. I will tell you, that's going to be a real quick explanation, so make sure you've done your homework and listen to how this works, and then we can just nitty-gritty answer your questions on that. But you're likely going to want to follow up with meal planning with our nutrition therapist to make sure that you have a plan of action. The other option is to do package B, which includes a 75-minute initial session. So that's going to allow more of a functional medicine assessment of going deeper into those 3 R's of remove, restore, repair. It'll also include things like supplement recommendations and some time for some strategic meal planning to get you on your way to success. So until then, definitely treat your gut right, breathe deep, and eat clean, and check out our site for more information. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished podcast. Visit our blog at AllieMillerRD.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at AllieMillerRD on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.